Good evening. We couldn't have a Reformation conference without meeting Martin Luther. So, with your permission, I'm going to ask you to imagine that I am he, and I'm going to tell you the story of my life. I'm only a man, but a man whom God used. I was born on 1 hour before midnight on the 18th of November in 1483. My parents were peasants, as generations before them had been. Within 6 months of my birth, my family moved to Mansfeld. I was born in Eisleben, and they moved to Mansfield because my father had become a shareholder in a mine, a copper mine, a above-ground strip mine. And my father began to prosper after having been a peasant for generations before him. As soon as I was able, I was conscious of the need to obey my mother and father. They drilled that into us very early. My father was to be obeyed. My mother, on one occasion, beat me until blood flowed for stealing one walnut, which she intended to use in cooking. I thought that was severe. But I learned to obey my parents. I learned my view of God from my father. My father was to be obeyed. He was able to provide for me a good education. I went to grammar schools in neighboring towns. These were for the purpose of learning Latin grammar, in which all subsequent learning was, as I have told you before, was conducted. I went to Magdeburg and to Eisenach, and typically as a student sang in the streets, and kind housewives would give me supper. It was commonly done by students in those days. I had a tenor voice. Now, that may surprise you. I accompanied my singing with a lute. I strummed a lute. And others said I did very well. I will not argue with their judgment. Soon, it came time to enter university. My father decided that I should major in law. He wanted to be sure that I was able to provide him a good old age. There were only three possible professions in my time: law, medicine, and theology. Each was taught by an expert in one of those. And my father decided that law was the most lucrative, and therefore, and my father was to be obeyed, so I proceeded in the study of law. He made possible my doing so by purchasing for me the standard textbook for law studies. A few of you may remember from your history past the Corpus Juris Civilis, the body of civil law, compiled in the days of Justinian, the emperor of Constantinople, back in the 6th century. I say a few of you may remember that. Very few, apparently. And this newly published, after all, newly published, this is the early 1500s. It is when movable type had just been introduced. That wonderful preparation by the Almighty God for the Reformation that was to come, which I knew nothing about at the time, but movable type printing was the most significant invention of our times in my day. Well, armed with such a textbook and with the support of my parents, I entered Erfurt University, University of Erfurt. It is still operating in your day in Germany. And I proceeded to prosper in my studies. I say that with no pride, but I was diligent and well prepared by my father's insistence that I did well, earned a bachelor's degree and then a master's degree. And now I had mastered the arts. It was time now to decide on a profession. Now, my father decided law. I had nothing to do with that decision at this point. I proceeded, but I was troubled. I was very troubled. A close friend of my study days died. My age, he died. That was the closest I had been to experiencing death. If that had been I was conscious to say, I would have been in hell. I knew not the peace of heart that my heart longed for. So I did, before proceeding with my studies, I did something that university students have been doing for centuries since. I took a week of cuts. I went home to think about, to consider, to plead for time. I couldn't really discuss it with my parents. His decision had been made. But I was not a good conversationalist in those days. And necessarily, soon, began my way back to the university. It was on that journey back that the Lord did something which changed the course of my life. I was caught in a violent thunder and lightning storm. Now, you in your modern age, you know all about the scientific meaning of that. You can explain the atmosphere. I don't know what I'm talking about. In my time, this struck fear. God is displeased. The angels are upset. I was afraid. I was fearful for my life. And I prayed a prayer to heaven. Help me, St. Anne. I'll become a monk. St. Anne was the patron saint of miners. My father was a miner. We had learned to pray to St. Anne in my parents' home. We prayed that she would plead with Mary, who would plead with her son, who in turn would plead with the Father to answer our prayer. She was the closest thing to heaven for me. I prayed to St. Anne. I fell to the ground in virtual dust. And I felt relieved. I'll become a monk. I returned to the city, announced to my friends that I'm becoming a monk. I held a little party for my friends in the tavern. The tavern was the restaurant. And gave away my lute. Gave away my copy of the Corpus Civilis that my father had so dearly purchased. I entered the monastery, the Augustinian monastery in the same city of Erfurt. And I proceeded to be the most faithful monk you can imagine. The most diligent. I did everything I could to humiliate myself. I scrubbed stone floors that were already clean. I was manic in my determination to put myself down. I was a problem to the head monk, the abbot of the monastery. I was never at peace. Periodically, there passed through our town the regional superintendent, you would say, of the monastic order, examining the various monasteries in the order and discovering how things were going, any problems. Oh, yes, my abbot said, there's this brother Martin. I wish you would talk with him. He's never at peace. He's working so hard for peace. So, Father Staupitz was his name. He took me, sat in a bench in the monastery garden. Brother Martin, what is the problem? I told him. And he said, now, my brother, you have been trying to obey God. You've been trying to love God. And you're failing in both. You must learn to trust God. You must learn to believe God. Now, these were new words for me, new thoughts. Trust God. Believe God. It helped. It helped for a while. By this time, I tell you, I had earned a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And before a few months had passed, this same Father Staupitz suggested, your education, God will use. You should become a priest. All you need do now with your education is to learn the Mass, to learn to perform the Mass. I learned to perform the Mass. The day came when I was to be ordained a priest. This is a marriage to the Church. The families gather and are happy to celebrate this great event. My father and mother came, and I performed my first Mass. I elevated the cup with the words, this is my blood. I, a poor mortal, was creating Christ. I almost fainted in fear. I faltered. When it was over, my father did not congratulate me, son. He rather said, there is a commandment that you have not obeyed. Honor thy father and thy mother. My father was not reconciled to my decision until many, many years later. I'm a priest. Soon I have a parish. I have people I'm responsible for. Soon later, our prince, the elector, there were 7 electors who elected the Holy Roman Empire whenever one died. Our elector, you would say governor, established a new university to rival the well-established Leipzig University. And in the city of Wittenberg it was. And he needed a faculty. And Staupitz, my spiritual advisor, was commissioned to help create a faculty for this new fledgling university. He came to me and assigned me to go to Wittenberg, become a member of the faculty. I'm a servant of the Church. Whatever my authority tells me to do, I must do. Obedience. I go. I'm assigned first the chair of moral philosophy. I did not know what the term meant. I had to work hard to stay one lesson ahead of my students. Wrote out lectures. That was the commonplace. Wrote out lectures, went to the classroom, read those lectures. The students wrote down those lectures as the professor read them and regurgitated them on the next test. This was called education. Soon, I was given the chair of biblical studies. I was now going to use the Bible as my textbook. I was 21 years old before I saw and handled a copy of the Bible. 21 years old. How old were you when you saw and handled your first Bible? What treasure you have had. I started with Genesis. I offered a course in Genesis. I was going to go through Genesis each semester. At the end of the semester, I had completed through chapter 3. You could sign up again, and we'll begin with chapter 4. I abandoned this idea and soon chose shorter books. And I had read Romans 1, 16 and 17. Herein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. But for me, that was fearsome. I must be as righteous as God is righteous. I am a sinner. When my university friend died, I saw myself as a sinner. How can I be righteous? Later, I started to teach the Psalms. I came to Psalm 31. Preserve me, O Lord, for in Thee do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in Thy righteousness. And the Spirit of God used that text to show me that it was God's righteousness imputed to me, not achieved by me, that was my deliverance. This was Eureka for me. I have found it. This did not come suddenly, but it was a result of a long period of difficulty, of conflict and of struggle. But I came to know the meaning of justification by faith, not by works. Before long, as a pastor, as a priest, I began to see the application of these words and was confronted by the effects of a decision by the Pope of Rome to build a new monument to St. Peter in Rome. The building of St. Peter's Cathedral. There had been a St. Peter's Church since the 4th century, but it was long since too small and in need of great repair. And as a gift to the German people, they were given the privilege of providing monies with which to build this tribute to Peter in Rome by the dispensing of indulgences. An indulgence was an extreme grace. If you're indulgent to a child, you're giving him too much. The church was going to give remission, cancellation of the effects of sin to those who made a contribution to the church. An indulgence was a papal document promising diminishing your years of punishment, temporal punishment, in purgatory for sins whose guilt has been forgiven by the church, but you must pay the price. You may sing, Jesus paid it all to Him I owe. But if we knew that all we could sing was, Jesus paid one half, you must pay the other. He took care of the guilt, I must pay the punishment. Do you know the meaning of full and complete pardon? We did not. And there came through my town, although my prince forbade his coming through the town, came to the adjacent town with just a river and a bridge between the two, Tetzel, a Dominican monk. I mean, this is like Baptist and Presbyterian. I'm an Augustinian, and Tetzel is a Dominican. We're competitive. He is the peddler of indulgences, and he offers them. He is accompanied by a member of the Fugger family, the bankers of the time, who had advanced the monies which were being repaid by these gifts from the people. Step right up, folks. Who will be first? Who of you is so cold-hearted that he would forbid the giving of a coin for the purpose of releasing the poor, struggling soul of his departed grandmother in the pains of purgatory? As soon as the sound of the coin is heard in the chest, the money chest, a soul flies up to heavenly rest. Step right up, folks. Who will be first? I say these were not forbidden in my hometown, but my people crossed the river, crossed the ridge, and I met one of my own parishioners in a drunken stupor. How dare you, I said to him, a child of God, wallow in... It's all right, he says, I have an indulgence signed by the Pope himself. I'm all right. And what was intended to be a remission of penalty was by the common people interpreted as a forgiveness of sins. It emboldened them. And before long, I went to my study and I said, I'll put a hole in Tetzel's drum. And I wrote out a few questions. There were 95 of these questions. I wrote them in Latin. They were not for the common people. They were concepts for debate by scholars. These were in Latin. And one of them said, if the Pope has the power to release souls from purgatory, why does he not, out of his evangelical charity, declare purgatory empty, rather than for filthy lucre dispense indulgences? Question mark. There were 94 others like that. Somebody put them on the church door. Most of the historians say it was I. There's no historical record of that fact. They were posted, but they were designed to be debated by scholars, not for the common people. The common people couldn't read them. They're in Latin. Well, now trouble. Trouble came as authorities got word of this. All kinds of events followed. Eventually, I was brought before a tribunal in a neighboring city. I was summoned to Rome to be tried for heresy. My prince forbade my going. He is a German. If you have a problem with him, you can try him here. The emperor agreed. The German emperor agreed. In 1519, I went to a debate on these theses. At Leipzig, the rival university, and there was opposed by Johannes Eck, a German scholar. He gave me all quotations from the church fathers against my words. I answered with the words of Paul, the apostle. He became frustrated, and I said that I don't believe in the authority of Pope. I call for a church council as the ancient church settled issues. A church council. You want a council, Eck said. The Council of Constance 100 years ago burned John Huss for teaching essentially what you're teaching. You want a council. Well, thank you very much. I know now that I can't even entrust a church council. That was the beneficial effect of that debate for me. The year 1520 came, and I wrote a number of documents that became well published. I said it was as if The printing press was my courier, as if angels were my courier, so rapidly were my words dispersed throughout the land. What I was doing could not have been done 100 years before because of the invention, the application from China of the movable type printing. Angels were my couriers. And then came 1521, summoned by the emperor to a formal meeting at the Diet, the Congress of the Holy Roman Empire, in the city of Worms, 1521. Worms, where a great statue today stands in my memory. There, among many other things, the issue of Luther was finally brought up, and I was presented with copies of all my works on the table in front of me. Do you acknowledge you have written these? Yes. Will you renounce and recant their contents? What an absurd question. Of course not. I've written many of these things as the church agrees with. You want me to renounce them all? Think of what you're asking. You are beside the point. Will you or will you? I ask for time. I'm not ready to make such a declaration. I had remembered that if I'm brought before magistrates, I'm to take no thought then as to what I shall say, but in that hour it shall be given me. I ask for time to properly frame my reply. They gave me 24 hours. I went to the lodging. I spent the night in prayer. I didn't write a speech. Lord, you have promised to give me what I should say in such an hour. I pray thee to do so. I am thy servant. I seek thy will. Help me. Went the next day, same two questions. To the second, I said, there are many different things here that I've written. Some of them you agree with, some of them you do not. My conscience is captive to the Word of God. Unless I am shown by clear proofs from the Scriptures where I have erred, I will retract nothing. To go against conscience thus instructed is neither right nor safe. I stand here. I can do no other. God is my helper. Amen. The emperor, who had given me safe conduct, was honorable and kept his word. I was condemned in absentia. I had completed my response, and I left the hall. And after I had left, I was condemned. But my prince gave me the privilege of returning to my home in peace. Or so I thought. En route, I was kidnapped by my friends. My own prince had me sent to one of his castles. And he was told, don't tell me which one you've sent him to, so I can be honest when I say, I don't know where he is. That was a little bit. But I was taken to the Wartburg Castle, which would be my home for the next 10 months. I was in disguise as Knight George, Junker Georg, and I spent the time translating the New Testament from Greek into German. I made Paul speak German, and it became the beginning of what was to be the German Bible. Eventually returned to Wittenberg. And I must conclude by telling you that on Easter Sunday of 1523, 12 nuns escaped a nunnery in a fish cart, a fishmonger's cart. This fishmonger had been given the responsibility of providing for the nunnery, often delivered fish. Under a tarp over the wagon, these 12 nuns, actually there were 9, 3 of them went back home, They learned that monks in nearby monastery were fleeing the monastery. And they too, I had written on monastic vows that they were made to men and not to God. They were not binding. God's order was the married life. There was no piety in deliberate and purposeful spinsterhood. And these nuns had read some of my tracts, and they were escaping. And I was in on it. And I felt an obligation to them. And the nine came to Wittenberg. And we had to find husbands for them. And we were successful in all but one. And she would not have whom we chose for her. We thought that was a remarkable effrontery on her part. Until she smiled when we said, "Well, whom will you take?" She didn't accept those. And she looked at me. I was under the imperial ban. I could have been put to death any day. I will not, of course not. I will not hasten you to a marriage altar and then to a funeral bier. No. And she said, "Yes." And we were married in June. I had no intention of marrying. I mean, this is 1523, 24. She worked for 2 years as a domestic in the city of Wittenberg before this finally came about. And I had no intention. When Erasmus heard about this, he said, "A priest marrying..." No, others, when they heard about it, said, "A priest marrying a nun? A monk marrying a nun? Why, the fruit of such a union will be the Antichrist." And he is supposed to have replied, "If that be true, there be many Antichrists in the world already." Finally, I realized, I mean, my bed had not been made in months. It was covered with dried perspiration. I had not thought about marrying. We were married. It was decided that evening. I called Lucas Cronach, my friend, the painter, and a local parish priest to perform the ceremony. And we went to bed. I mean, that was the extent of the engagement. It was a matter of hours. 2 weeks later, we had a nice formal wedding in the town, in the church, and invited all the family. My father was finally reconciled to his son. He was happy for this event. And God used me, and I conclude with this, God used me unthinkingly to restore the married pastor's pattern for the Christian ministry. What had been for centuries falsely assumed to be a super piety was now a recognition of that common divinely ordained arrangement, so that the highest earthly calling can be combined fruitfully with a family responsibility. What a beautiful truth this is, that you have seen, witnessed, and you have witnessed, realized in so many men. I had no such intention, but God did. And soon, in February of 1546, I took my leave of this world and went to a better. The patriarch's servant said, when he had found the bride for his master's son, "I, being in the way, the Lord led me." That was my testimony. He led me out of ignorance into understanding. He led me out of darkness into light. He led me out of ecclesiasticism to biblical piety. And at last, on the 18th of February in 1546, he led me out of this life to a better life.